Hello, hello. Welcome back to Inspiring African Travel. This is James here, and we've made it to the fourth episode of the podcast relaunch, and pretty excited today to share with you the West African contingent of our Julius Bry fundraising mission, and it's the Awutu Winton High School in Ghana. Now, a portion of the funds from this Inspiring African Travel fundraiser are going to be going towards this wonderful school. And yeah, I really can't wait to share with you the wonderful work that's been done at this school. So what makes this episode unique is it's our very first walk and talk episode. And it's the first of, I hope, many more out in the wilderness, sharing with you the sights and sounds of the wonderful places in Africa. But we didn't actually record this in Africa. We recorded it in the UK, in the lovely green rolling hills of Devon. And I walked with my very good friend and basically family, Max Sayers. And we brought together three of the things that form a great part of our lives: walking and being in the outdoors, a real passion for Africa and making a difference, and of course, our joint love and admiration for Julia. And those three topics basically form the foundation of this episode. We'll be talking about how much Jules meant to us and her lasting legacy. We're going to cover a lot about the school in Ghana, the Awutu Winton School in Ghana, how it came to be linked to us, and what they've achieved since the inception of the school, and what the plans are for the future and how you can be a part of it. If you're keen to learn more about what the EDP Trust is all about and how you can help, you can go and check out their website. It's the edp-trust.org. But you can also have a look at our website, inspiringafricantravel.com, where we will also have links to their website from there. But I just want to do a quick shout out again for everybody who's donated so far. But if you haven't yet donated and you're still keen, it's not too late. This is a rolling project. So whenever you're ready to donate, just jump onto our website. The GoFundMe page is up there and ready. So thanks, Max, for an amazing amount of patience as we recorded out in the countryside. And we really hope you enjoy this episode as we share our memories of Jules and the incredible legacy that we hope to create, both with Inspiring African Travel and what they've done in Ghana. Enjoy, everyone, and we'll catch you very, very soon.
We on?
Yeah.
Sure?
Well, you don't mind looking like a tit with this thing.
Oh, my God. Not worried about how I look. Evidently.
Okay, Max, well, now we're rolling, dude.
Nice.
There's no going back now. What...
We're in.
What is... I know I'm seeing the world through incredibly amazing new Oakley Prism lenses.
Here we go.
But for those other people
who are in slightly, slightly scratched sunglasses, we are currently walking through the wonderful Exmouth countryside, walking Jules's route, which is across Cranford Avenue, across the fields.
Where is Exmouth though?
Exmouth, Devon.
Where's South Devon?
Yeah, so East Devon. On the coast, you've got a wonderful bay in between Dawlish and Sidmouth, at the mouth of the River Ex. So Exeter's the capital of the county. And just downriver from there, you've got a wonderful seaside town called Exmouth.
And it's safe to say you're a fan of Devon.
I would say I'm definitely an advocate for Devon. It's potentially the most beautiful place in the world. And I might be a little bit biased, but I think it's incredible.
Well, you're one of the main reasons, you and Letty,
and your circle of friends and family in the area here are the people that lured Jules and I to come and stay down here. So very grateful.
It's the gorgeous countryside, the walks, the things like that, that, yeah, it wasn't us, it was Devon.
Well, coming from Africa, it was always going to be hard, wasn't it, for me?
Yeah.
But, you know, when Jules and I started off in London area, we both knew we could live somewhere in the UK, which is fresh countryside, seaside,
rolling
beautiful
hills, gorgeous sunshine. It's always sunny in Exmouth.
Which it is now. It is beautiful today. So we're going up through a few lanes, up a hill, one of these classic English countryside lanes with hedge on either side. And I'm sure we'll pause when we get up to Jules' spot.
Yes.
Why do we call it Jules' spot?
So on the day she passed away, we decided to go for a walk and we just stood up there and it felt like we were next to her.
It was amazing.
You stand up there and there was just, it was kind of a stormy day, but there was a kind of shooting dramatic light up there. It was just, yeah, the view from up there, it makes you feel like you're close to heaven if there is one.
Yeah, totally. It's, whenever you ask me what route should we do when we go for a run, invariably my response is
Jules's route. Which is nice, but it does have a whopping great big hill to the top of it. So sometimes, oh wow, look, there we go, buzzard.
Okay, we've got to do some off-roading here because there's a massive amount of water down here in the bottom of this valley. So
yes,
we're about to jump over a farmer's fence onto private property.
Of course.
So we can circumnavigate the water.
I hope you heard that squelch. I'm not sure where the water came from.
From the sky, isn't it?
Well, it never rains in Devon, so.
Oh yeah, of course.
But it's such a beautiful spot and we're about to walk out. The sun's setting on like a crisp autumn evening and we're just about to walk out into the warming sun.
Yeah, and I can't wait for a refreshing pint in a warming pub after this episode.
That sounds like a plan.
Okay, easy.
Need to lay off the pasties.
Ooh. Right, we're setting up the hill now. This is said hill.
Here we go, you'll start hearing the panting soon.
Speak for yourself, mate. It's just, I've been having high altitude training for the last few months.
I won't bring up last night.
Yeah. Max and I went for a run and he absolutely skinned me up this hill. Fast forward to when we came to the UK and
yes,
obviously you were part of our journey and you gave us so much support as Jules got sick and we tried to sort of stabilize our life and get the most out of the time we had with her and how she was making the most of her time with us and with, you know, on this earth.
Yes.
You said she inspired you a lot.
Oh, she did.
And we say that a lot. A lot of people say that about a lot of people, but how did she inspire you?
So she had this way of being able to, she was suffering, especially at the end. But when she would smile, she never complained, ever, ever, ever. Like you would never hear her, even if she was really uncomfortable, whatever, she would come down, she would make an effort, she would stand there because maybe she didn't want to sit down because it was painful and she would just involve herself in everything. She kindly obviously let me in when you guys were in the hospitals, when you'd moved down here, and she would always take the time to kind of, where some people will shut the doors, whereas Jules didn't, she opened them up even more. And I feel truly honoured to have been part of that journey and spend that time with her when being in hospital isn't a very enjoyable place for anyone, is it?
No.
But going in and getting those small moments where you can just have a good chat, you kind of ignore everything else, you ignore the fact you're sat in a hospital, she would always have a massive smile. That's the thing, like, you'd be feeling really shit for her.
Yeah.
And it would sometimes, like, yeah, maybe be getting upset or something like that, but you'd walk in and Jules would just have a big grin, give you a big hug and say, oh, I can't wait to get out. And
yeah,
and she always did. I remember the Christmas before last, and she ended up spending it in hospital in Guildford, and that was so tough on everyone, especially Jules. And yet she never ever complained about it. She said, "Have a lovely Christmas." And then the next year, she finally got out for Christmas, and I remember her walking down the stairs with that big grin, Christmas evening, and it was just, ah.
Well, she'd been sick all day, hadn't she, poor girl?
She was, yeah, she
was
so ill.
The whole of Christmas morning and lunch, we never even knew if she'd get out of bed.
Yeah.
And she was fighting through it, and
And then we had one of the best Christmases we've ever. It feels like we just started playing all these funny songs where we were humming. I've still got the playlist now, playing all that old school, old school vibes. Oh, it was lovely. It was so nice. And also inviting her family over and getting to spend time with Nema, getting to spend time with Anna, with Shahid, Tony, all these people that I would never have met that are the most wonderful people. And I feel truly honoured to have been part of their family. And I feel like we've got a whole nother family.
Yeah.
And I feel the same for all of us and Letty.
Yeah, I feel the same. It was so hard when Jules passed away. But as you said, when her family came, it was very hard to sort of push through the trauma and the grief of what had just had happened. But every now and then I was able to think of how Jules was with us in spirit, and how she would have been so happy to see all of us together, having nice family meals.
Sharing
and
food. I think food is a huge part of all this. It's just sitting down, sharing a meal together, sharing stories. Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it.
Well, that's because we're at Jules' spot. Let's take a quick photo.
Oh, wow. Look at this. Oh.
Nice.
That is stunning.
Oh, it's so beautiful up here. Absolutely stunning. Oh. We can see about a 100 degree view of the sea, the estuary, a kestrel hovering above the sun, a nice cool fresh air breeze, green grass. It's just orange light.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It's magic. To pull things back to the Awutu Winton Senior Secondary School in Ghana, which is prior to April this year, prior to a couple of months after Jules passed away, I had never been to, but I have somewhat been involved in the background because it was started by David and Inez, my godparents, a few years ago. But obviously, Jules and I had never been to West Africa. And one of the things we were definitely going to do when she got better, and unfortunately that moment didn't come, but we were planning a little sabbatical where we could go and spend some time in Africa at her home in East Africa. And we were definitely going to head to Ghana to get involved with the school. But tell me in a nutshell what the school's all about.
So the school was started 13 years ago. But like you said, David, Inez, and a guy called Peter Donkers. Peter had a dream of going back and building a school in Ghana. So he was working as a teacher here, but he wanted to bring some of the English education system back into Ghana. So once him and David got chatting, it was a match made in heaven. So
when was this exactly, the year?
This was 13 years ago, 2010. 13 years ago.
They found a piece of land in
Awutu. Yes, Peter had already purchased a piece of land, and he'd raised enough money to build a breeze block kind of shell. Which is still there now, phase one. So that's the Donker building. Then the school started to become a reality. Once they started building, the guys came over and said, "We don't need a primary school, we really want a good secondary school."
Which is obviously a much more of a challenging project to start and to run, right?
Yes, yeah, of course, because obviously you have to have much more expertise. But to be honest, David and everyone aren't really, aren't scared of challenges. So the plan was to go over and start a primary school. It morphed into a secondary school. And then in the first year, which was 2010, they had 91 students intake. So the first year of Awutu Winton students. And this was when there was only one set of classrooms. There was about 30 kids per class. And that was the start of Awutu Winton. Fully private. Everything at the school was paid for by EDP. So you've got two sections. You've got EDP Trust, which is a UK-based charity that I'm luckily a trustee of. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Awutu Winton Senior High School, which is the school in Ghana, which is obviously paid for by the charity in the UK.
Right. And how did you get involved with Awutu Winton Senior School? Before we talk about what's been achieved at the school and where it is now, like what was your first trip there like,
so
and how did you get involved?
So I met Letty in 2012 in Barcelona. And then once I met her parents and everything, obviously I got to hear about the school. I was at university and I thought, right, as soon as I finish, I'd love to go over and see this place. I'd never experienced any of Africa. When I met Letty, I'd never been outside of Europe, really. Both me and Letty said, okay, let's go and spend 6 months in Ghana. Fresh out of uni, didn't really know a huge amount, and then walked out into Ghana. And I will never forget that feeling of walking out the airport that first time. It's chaos. I'd never been to anywhere like that in my life. So, first of all, the heat just hits you like a train.
It really is hot there.
And then you look around and it's just cars driving the wrong way up dual carriageways, going around the wrong way, round roundabouts. It was just people selling stuff, trying to help you with your bags everywhere. You didn't know whether you'd been, whether they were taking your bags or you ever see them again and whatever. So it was carnage.
But for those who don't know you, Max, you like a bit of chaos in your life.
I do.
Noise.
I do.
So were you immediately shocked?
I had a big grin.
You were loving it.
Massive grin. Then went straight for a beer. So we had a beer office at the airport. Just a little bit of a time to acclimatise. And then we were in. So we went there, we turned up, and the school by that point had just had phase two built. So it was the other side. So they were running parallel to each other. So you ended up with, classrooms on left and right side. So by then we were up to about 120 students and it was a really, really buzzy place.
Before we talk about how many students the school has now and what it's achieved, it's a difficult question to sort of sum up slowly, but what is it about Ghana that needs our support?
So in Ghana, you have got so much potential. There it is, the whole country has got intelligent, enthusiastic, business-minded people who just simply need the chance to use education to be able to further themselves, because there's so much potential in this area that can then go and help, whether it's in the technologies, whether it's in medical side of things. There's so much kind of knowledge. If you give the people the tools to be able to educate themselves well, they will then be able to take themselves out of poverty, take their families out of poverty, and then really change the whole kind of, you can see it around our school now, just it changes the whole area where you end up with kind of economic progress from people getting education, then going into tertiary education. What, for example, one of the girls who was coming in to help me build the aquaponics, she was coming in because I was obviously getting her lunch and things like that. She didn't have enough money to buy her food and things like that. I said to her, if you weren't at school, where would you be? And she said, I'd be selling plantain for one CD, so 10 pence, on the side of the road. And we would all put the money towards the family. And that's how we would try and survive. Now she's currently in Berkeley in the US on a scholarship because she was hugely intelligent.
Amazing. And she's a former student of Awutu Winton.
Exactly. And that's never have got to that point if she hadn't come through the school. Because basically it's discovering this talent that is all there.
And that brings me to the main, what is the mission of EDP Trust or of the school itself?
So I think the mission is to educate and empower children who wouldn't otherwise have had it, to provide a high level of education which is greater. So even if you're not the most academic, you want to come out of this school feeling like you belong and that you have got the tools to then equip yourself through life.
Yep.
So whether it's the confidence to then go into a good job interview, you might not go into tertiary education, you might say, okay, this is perfect, but you've then got the skills to be able to do spreadsheets, you've got the skills to be able to do sporting stuff, you've got the art skills, you've got the ways and means to be able to make a living, because there's no safety net.
I'd spoken to David so much and to you about the school and everything that's going on there, but when I saw it firsthand,
I could actually, it all...
It clicks into
it
place,
it? Clicks into
it?
Place, because I'll take for example, the swimming pool.
Yes.
And, you know, it was such a big project building this beautiful swimming pool at the school. And when I had the opportunity to talk to the former students that were now swimming teachers and the water polo team.
Yes.
I saw how it had...
Ghana champions.
Ghana champions. Well, let's talk about it a little bit, because it made me realize, exactly, it epitomizes how that pool transformed the lives of so many people.
Yes.
And students. Why is it important? How did it do it?
So it does it by, obviously, when it's there, everyone says, okay, Ghanaians can't swim. Mm. But then you put a swimming pool there, and they are like fish. It's incredible. Everyone is swimming in, like, to the point where we've now got the water polo champions, which got entered into an international competition. Unfortunately, they weren't allowed the visas in Italy, but these are kids from our school that have come up with absolutely nothing to then potentially have the opportunities to go and travel, to go and see places. There's also, I think there's actually 12 previous students who have then come through. They've learnt how to swim through our Learn to Swim program. They've then gone on further and done their lifeguarding qualifications. They've done their teacher training, essentially. So now they're out earning money, doing lifeguarding and teaching, which then ties straight in with tertiary education. So there's quite a few of them that are using this to fund themselves through their degrees. When we installed it, this wasn't just for our school. Their idea was to obviously use it for the community. So we've allowed the space on the school. Then we get all the local schools coming, adults. We've now taught 8,000 kids and 500 adults to swim. By next year, that'll be over 10,000 of the local community how to swim and how to be safe around water.
Yes, which is
that's
absolutely
a
crucial.
Phenomenal amount.
Especially when the fact that we're quite close to the coast.
Yes.
And lots of...
if I sound out of breath.
That was a tough hill. I thought you handled it very well. Wow. Walk and talk.
Love it.
I love the buzz about the water polo, and I think there's a lot of enthusiasm about it, and all for the right reasons, as you pointed out.
Yes.
The school's the best water polo team in Ghana, and these niche sports, more than just being able to thrive, it means that it opens doors for them. That's the key, isn't it?
Yes.
These niche sports, once that we can make sure that the team gets the platform it deserves, water polo can open doors to college bursaries.
Exactly that.
Other jobs, and puts the school on the map, right?
Yes, yeah.
Next step, cricket and rugby. Do you think it can happen?
I think it can. I genuinely... So on our next trip out there, which is in 2 weeks' time, we're taking about 20 suitcases full of rugby kit and cricket equipment. And Camford, who's a school we work with in the UK, have already been out there with a whole stash of rugby and netball and things like this. So what we want to do is promote these fringe sports. Football has a massive hold in the whole of Africa.
Yeah.
Everybody loves football. And everybody knows a famous footballer from their local town who's then in the Premiership, etc., earning crazy money. So it's, they aspire to be like these guys, understandably. And their football skills are incredible. But the athleticism that is there, is it can cross multiple sports. So if we can start introducing sports such as rugby, such as cricket, we can then start to, again, grow the profile. And for someone, for example, myself, like, I've never been a very good footballer, but you give me a rugby ball and I can run straight through people. So it gives you other sports that you can then excel in. Obviously, rugby values can see you through the whole of life. So you've got respect, you've got fitness, you've got so many different tools that you get from playing rugby and being involved in rugby that can then obviously help you through every other aspect of life. Cricket, likewise, it's an amazing sport. We've just built sports pitch. So we've spent the last 5 years, since 2018, when we went out there, me and Letty, for our honeymoon, we started, that was the first time the shovel went in the ground.
Wow.
And we had our first football match on our new pitch when we were there together in
In April, last year, this year, sorry.
Yes, the less said about our football skills, the better. And our fitness levels in that heat.
Yeah, it was hot. But we had a good half each.
Yeah.
I would say no goals were scored, but a lot of kids running rings around us. But it was good fun.
For people who might like to get involved and who are going to be donating to IAT for this, how can they help?
So currently we have a partnership with the government. So the government currently pays for the teachers and we cover the infrastructure and all the administration staff and everything that goes with that. So up until now, it's cost us probably 150,000 a year to run.
150,000 British pounds?
Yes, yeah.
So what's
British
that?
Pounds. Like, so yeah. It works out to be, on average, £300 per student, because we've got a population now of 520 kids, and it works out to be roughly 150,000 per year. With that then covers all the books, that covers all the uniforms, because we strive to be fee-free. We don't want money to get in the way of these kids learning. With that, we then try and provide the most incredible school. So a budget of that goes towards infrastructure. So for example, this year we've been building a new art lab. Art room. So we can do
art department.
Yeah.
Cool.
So with the art department, we'll then be doing ceramics. So the kids will be using their hands, because again, a lot of these kids are from really poor areas that you find the polytechnic side of things, they really, really love. So they love using their hands. They love being creative. They love the design side of things. Mm-hmm. So with the art side, now we've introduced it into the curriculum, we're going to be doing graphics on our computers. We're going to be doing ceramics. We'll do fine art as well. So this will, again, give them skills. So when they go out, they can then be designing business logos. They can be doing certain potteries and things like that.
And that all ties in with the fact that the school's aim is not just to be a secondary school, but to be a centre of excellence.
Yes. So back to the funding side of things. So it's always been family and friend funded. Looking forward, we're looking to find sponsors for kids, because that's a way of being able to create a relationship and educate not only the kids in Africa, but you then also learn and you get an insight into their lives back in the UK.
Yeah.
We're also looking at kind of corporate sponsors to then be able to help with the larger infrastructure projects. So the things that cost large sums of money, for example, building the arts art department and things like this. So when you've got these big building projects, we then can use larger donations to then help promote that. For example, we were really struggling to get the kids to pass their maths. So then we had a donation, which we then used to create our own maths textbook, which will then help guide the kids through, because the maths is unbelievably hard. I would say it's close to degree level maths. So when I did maths and further maths at A level, and that it touches on a lot of that stuff. And this is the equivalent of A levels crossed with GCSEs crossed with degree level math, and they're learning it in a second language, a lot of them. We spent a good chunk of money to then create this textbook to then help bring the level of maths from quite a low standard to really excel.
So, I mean, essentially, David and Inez would like to retire at some point. They'll always be involved in some way. It's basically up to you and Letty and the next generation to make sure that we find a new bank of supporters and ambassadors and people who can donate it. And it's a big responsibility for you.
It's always kind of been there in the back of my mind, but we need to have multiple revenue streams to then allow the school to continue thriving.
Yeah.
Because you need to have the sponsorship, if we need to do bigger projects, then obviously you need the corporate sponsorship. And then you also need that family and friend base, which comes through promotion. It comes through, for example, me and my two business partners, James and Courtney, we've been out there, you go there, you see it. And as soon as you get there, it's impossible to not fall in love with the place. And you see it, and seeing is believing. When you look around at the kids there and the experience they're getting and gaining, this will change their lives forever. It won't just be a simple case of giving someone a tenner or something like that. This will change their lives. They will remember this moment in their life for the entirety of their life. And the friends they make, the stuff they learn,
the relationships they build, whether it's with the teachers, whether it's with their peers, it's really life-changing stuff. And when you see these stories of kids going to these amazing universities, whether they're in Ghana or whether they're, and they would not have had that chance otherwise. So the fact that we've now gone from 91 kids up to 520 means that it has had a financial burden.
Yeah.
But it's a burden that I think we're all willing to accept and kind of put the time aside to then really make it work, because yeah, I don't want to be the person to stand there and go, ah, we're going to have to cut the numbers down, or we're going to have to do this, because...
No, it won't. With your enthusiasm and your network, and hopefully anyone listening to this, you know, and who's keen to come on board and support our IAT project for this year for Jules, as little as £300, I think, as he said, is enough to support the education of one child through a year at this school, right?
Yeah, that's
And also, I think, hopefully, as this podcast slowly reaches more audience and people who have a love for Africa and inspiring stories from Africa, this is certainly an inspiring one from West Africa. And anybody who knows anybody who can provide some sort of value for the school, maybe there's a former teacher or someone who's involved in rugby or cricket or water polo or an arts connection, music, anything.
Hit the nail on the head here, because it's not all about trying to raise funds, it's trying to raise the school, trying to raise the bar in the school, trying to get so people with these expertise that when they come over, everyone buys into it, they love it. And you can, like I've done with David, is taken his knowledge of West Africa, taken his knowledge of business and used it for myself. That's what these kids will do as well. And so you can come over and you can...
Well, I think it's a phenomenal school, and everybody that's been involved over the years should be very proud. Peter, he's like the father there, Peter Donker, who's obviously the founder and managed to get David and Inez involved, but to see him in that environment was very touching. And just everything that's been achieved at that school to date. Just to sum up, you know, we know that in various parts of Africa, girls and women don't have as much opportunity as boys and men. And it was really encouraging to see so many former students, female students, that were thriving. How many girls are at the...
Originally we started off and it was roughly 50-50.
Yeah.
But the key to changing a society is educating the females in that society, because then they get given the economic kind of freedom. They also educate themselves so they don't just, so they take control over their own bodies. And so you can see in all around Africa, if you educate the females, you then see the population growth slow down. And so now we've gone from having a roughly 50-50 to probably 55 to 60% females at the school. And obviously, we can then see that hopefully going back in, because statistically they do better than the boys. They're much more engaged. I think obviously, as we will know, a 14-year-old boy doesn't think much, whereas a 14-year-old girl's got their head screwed on, kind of knows what they're doing. And I think that's the way to be able to change the society as well, is by educating the females who wouldn't have had the chance, because often in Ghana they'll put the sons into... Or they'll save up to put the sons into a good education, and then the girls will then look after the house and things like that. Whereas it's trying to break those molds that will then allow society to change, and then that's kind of why we're trying to focus more on females than on males.
Great.
But also, we've got some great guys there as well.
Of course. Wow, look at those waves.
I know.
We don't usually get good waves down in this bay, but...
We always get good waves down here.
Of course we do, sorry. Epic waves, epic sunshine.
Gorgeous sunset. I hope you can hear the sea.
Well, we'll head down there now, and we're just wrapping up, so the timing has been good. So we're coming to the end of Jules's route. I'm sure people will start to hear more dog walkers, and you know I love dogs. Dog walkers and people enjoying an evening stroll. And we're nearly at the pub as well.
Perfect. For a nice cleansing ale.
Yeah. Great, dude. There's so much I can say about my first visit to Ghana and my first visit to the school. It was a tough time in my life because, you know, I wanted to be there with Jules and with you.
Yeah.
And it was also a hard environment because I've been all over Africa, well, all over Eastern Southern Africa, and the poverty in Ghana really struck me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in that greater Accra area.
Oh.
And a huge amount of poverty.
I remember,
and it's a harsh environment, isn't it?
Sitting in that car in a market in central Accra, looking at that river and looking at the kids running around, and it possibly the most polluted place I've ever seen.
Yeah. We saw an actual river choked up by plastic, didn't we?
Oh, it was, yeah.
And smoke from the and just so many desperately poor and malnourished children.
It was
in the market.
Yeah, that will stick with me for a long time. I remember looking around just thinking,
wow.
You feel helpless.
You feel helpless, but...
But then you come back to the school,
yes.
And you see the opportunities that you're building.
Exactly that.
From and being there and from helping these kids out.
And what I found also was special is that you took me to three orphanages and charities in the area near the school, where I met some future students that are coming to Uwutu Winton, and spoke about some of the students that had come through these orphanages. And that is something very special what you guys are doing. It has an open door policy to kids who have absolutely nothing and need every bit of help they can get.
And the kids who are in Liberia Camp, so Liberia Camp is where a lot of our students come from, and they are, it's after the Liberian War in the 50s, there was a huge migration of people, refugees, who then came and Ghana opened the doors and said, okay, you can have this area. But it's unbelievably poor, and the school we went and looked around, run by Stephen, it's amazing. It's all self-funded by himself and his wife. He's my age, he's 32, 33, and has 29 kids living with him.
It's incredible. What such a nice man.
And we've got his students coming directly to our school. We also work with Eric the accountant, his pastor, who has also got an orphanage for disabled kids. And in Ghana, there's a real stigmatism about being disabled because of the religious side of things. They see it as God punishing
God,
you. Yeah. So this guy welcomes in these disabled kids. Some of them will be with him for life. And we've tried to start them building relationship because a lot of them, they'll be physically disabled, but they're not mentally disabled. They're mentally sharp. So last year we had our first disabled student come through, which is Joseph.
Oh, he's got cerebral palsy.
Yes, that's it.
Such
the guy with the biggest smile in the whole
nice
school.
I got to meet his father as well.
Yeah, and he's on the hardship fund because, they're from an unbelievably poor background. So he stays in the hostel with all the other boys. Because what this does is not only educate Joseph, who's disabled, but it educates the whole school population to break down that kind of barrier where they think it's a punishment, because it's not a punishment. It's not sent by God. It is simply a disability.
The whole idea of this journey with Inspiring African Travel and our partnership with Uwutu Winton School in Ghana is that we can share the journey as people start to donate more money in this coming year. We can show more about the projects that are taking place and the things that have been done over the years and the girls and boys involved, the teachers, everything, you know. So we'll share more and more about this project because we want people who decide to donate and follow our journey for Jules, for the Inspiring African Travel, we want them to be a part of this project and all the other projects that we'll be supporting so that they can see where their money is going and they can grow a relationship. And so many times when you donate, it's just like,
you never see it,
you just got to donate.
That's what makes EDP so different, because it is such a small, tight-knit charity. Every single penny, we've not got overheads, no one's taken any wages. Every single penny that goes in goes straight to the school. There's no, some charities are running and rightly so, they have big overheads, they've got big offices, all this lot. We don't. We have a tiny little a room where we all meet up in David's house and have a lovely meal that Innie's cooked. And the overheads are zero, basically. And what we want to do is show people where it goes, because that's the exciting part. That's when you get that connection, and that's where it's not only educating the kids, it's educating us. Because you go, ah, oh, you build the relationships and things like that. And that's what makes it special.
Yep.
And likewise, what you're doing with Inspiring African Travels is amazing. I've learned so much about divers. I've learned about Maasai divers. I've learned about so many different projects that I would never have even dreamed of kind of looking up or anything like that. So,
well, this is just the start.
Yeah. You and Jules, you've started something, and I can see it has got legs. It will go on for a long time, and you should be proud.
Thanks, mate. And I can't thank you enough for hosting me for that week in Ghana at a time where I needed to be in a fresh environment and to see hardships that other people are going through.
Yeah.
And how, you know, positivity can come out of sadness and trauma and out of squalor. And it's and also I want to thank all the people at the school who hosted me and showed me around, and too many people to thank, but Seth and the whole team, just Peter, everybody there.
Well, I look forward to having you back out in Ghana in the next 12 months.
Thanks, mate. It's been really good. And well done for everybody and all their work. And that's a wrap.